Since I recorded the last podcast, I went into Disk Utility to check, check the hard drive file system, and it was corrupted, and it couldn't repair itself.
Well, you had everything backed up, right?
Actually, I had just done a massive backup, and I had everything backed up, and I did it onto two disks, and I checked one of the discs for corruption. It didn't have it, so yeah, got through it. And then, so I had to reinstall my apps, all the apps that I liked. So the app, let's see, apps that I installed right away. I just want to list them.
Okay.
GarageBand, ByWord, BBEdit, Kindle, Evernote, Pixelmator, White Noise, Pages, Chrome, Dropbox, MAMP, FileZilla, and I also threw in PicFrame, but that was just, just throwing that out.
Now, if you were on a deserted island and you could only take three apps.
Deserted, desert island apps?
What would you take with you?
Of only three apps, that's pretty harsh. I guess
we're on a deserted island. I mean, it's harsh.
Do I have network connectivity, or am I just doing my own deserted island work, offline? Probably
you can have network connectivity.
Oh, okay. Then BBEdit, Kindle, and Evernote.
So what would you do with those three? Do they work together well, those three?
No, I mean, Kindle would give me the ability to read books. Evernote would let me, record notes and capture stuff. And BBEdit would allow me to work on text files. So, I mean, which sounds kind of like Evernote, but if you're working with code or something, you don't want, a rich text editing note platform like Evernote. You want, straightforward but powerful text editing, platform like BBEdit.
No internet app?
I mean, you're screwed either way. I was just kind of trying to think of apps that would work, and be cool, like apps to use. But something like a web browser, I guess, is pretty fundamental. But then it comes down to Safari versus Chrome, which I'll use one or the other in different situations these days.
I think I would take GarageBand.
It's a good pick.
Facebook. And iTunes.
Okay.
Ooh, wow. You have to pick three. Spotify.
See, it's very hard to get it down to three.
Make music, and then have my Facebook connection to the world.
And when I didn't even mention the video editing apps I use, I don't know. Like, if you can't edit code, you get rid of BBEdit, then maybe you can edit video with Final Cut Pro. But, you got to pick one or the other. It's very hard.
Let's hope that we're not in this situation.
Yeah, that's like a, where does that phrase, is just an old phrase, but there's a British program with the outdated name, Desert Island Discs, I think. There's a British program on the, I guess on TV, on radio, on BBC Radio 4. Let's see. I don't think they, I don't know if it's on right now or if they're just, it's selection of BBC World Service programming. Oh, so it's on, it's on at Sundays at 11:15.
By the minutes, what happened then?
Yes, at this point in time, I think we were only five of us who were left, and I think we were three police officers and two civilians, including myself.
You're going to lose it too!
The fifth guy hit the ground on the ground floor. They opened fire at us, and they started shooting, and we started shooting back, and unfortunately, they shot one of our colleagues in the stomach, but we were also able to evacuate him and get him the proper medical care that he required at that time.
It must have been absolutely terrifying, Abdul.
I would say, on, under normal circumstances, yes, it would have been terrifying, but at that point in time, in that situation we were, most of us, I think we were just being driven by adrenaline because you could not see any of the guys I was with being shaken or thinking about retreating. We stayed our ground, we shot back at them, and we kept going even after that, even after our colleague was shot at. We got reinforcements.
Okay, so this has been a out-of-context clip from the BBC World Service. Something was definitely going down in that clip, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
But other stuff going down that is kind of out there. This is some shit from Fox News. And as I've said before, as I've called her before, crazy ass Megyn Kelly. She it's not as funny as her demented laugh in that segment that I've played before on the show, but it's pretty out there, the shit that she says here. But before I play the Megyn Kelly clip, we've got this one from the Rachel Maddow show where she's covering the Republican Civil War, how the business shill Republicans are kind of fighting against the Tea Party Republicans.
And House Republicans have decided to start a huge fight in Congress right before bedtime.
Frankly, I just think that they've lost all credibility. You know, when they pushed us into this fight to defund Obamacare and to shut down the government. Most of you know, my members know, that wasn't exactly the strategy that I had in mind. If you recall, the day before the government reopened, one of the people, one of these groups, stood up and said, well, we never really thought it would work. Are you kidding me?
Deadly. Are you kidding me? Republican House Speaker John Boehner.
So, yeah, you know, there's because there's an actual fight going on in the Republican Party, these people are trying to distract.
Santa Claus should not be a white man anymore. And when I saw this headline, I kind of laughed and I said, oh, this is so ridiculous. Yet another person claiming
this is bullshit.
It's racist to have a white Santa, you know? And by the way, for all you kids watching at home, Santa just is white, but this person is just arguing that maybe we should also have a
for
black Santa.
For all you
Santa.
Kids
but, you know,
watching
Santa
Fox
Woody
News.
Is, just so you know, we're just debating this because someone wrote about it, kids.
That, I mean, yeah, so apparently that's the contention. Is that Santa Claus is white, according to Megyn Kelly. And then, of course,
Santa Claus is white, deal with it.
You sure?
Well, he's been white in your world, and he's been white in my world. Well, okay, I have to say, Snurdly's got a good point here. From the beginning of time, and when Santa Claus entered the sphere of time, Santa Claus
was
even white. The Coca-Cola Santa Claus was white. The Gillette shaver Santa Claus was white. Right. The Life magazine, that's, I have to say that Snurdly has a valid point here, that wherever you looked, Santa Claus was white in America. History. But what about in Africa? Was Santa Claus white in Africa?
All right, so anyway, so that's what That's the contention the Republicans are making right now.
Well, they had their war on Christmas last year, so they've got to have something to talk about over the holiday season.
Yeah, and I don't think they're shutting up necessarily about that war on Christmas scam. I think that there's some of those idiots are actually talking about that. It's like the same characters.
Here's the thing. I mean, Santa Claus is a mythical character. Maybe he's, you know, derived from St. Nicholas. But it's make-believe, and Santa Claus is really the spirit of Christmas, and you can make the spirit of Christmas look like whatever you want it to look like. So, no, Santa Claus does not have to be white. And, I mean, gosh, it's just so blatantly racist. Like, they think that they're making, like, a historical point on a mythical figure?
It's there you go. It's this like diluted pseudo history. Right. But you know what?
That's their game. That's
true. No, it's true because you hear right wingers say stuff like, you know, every time a country starts issuing paper money by fiat, the dictators take over. Or like, you know what I mean? You hear these crazy things that people say like they're true. They have a totally warped understanding of history. Most people have a very superficial understanding of history. I mean, pretty much anyone does in the whole scope of everything that's happened. But people are so deluded. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's this stupid right-wing narrative about everything that's basically becoming the norm for a lot of parts of the culture. And it's, like, totally delusional. You know, I saw somebody tweet today, Andy Inako. He tweeted something like, something about, like, great countries being proud of themselves, like, let's see, a strong nation takes pride in its accomplishments, unquote. And I wrote, that is utterly, utterly fascist thinking. You didn't land on the moon. But, does that make any sense? Like, I think people take... They have this, like, elevated sense of, like, their own tribe. And that can be the country. That can be being white. That can be all these things. So people still have this, the whole American exceptionalism argument. That's become a big flashpoint, a rhetorical flashpoint in the Obama era. And why is that? Because to a lot of people, it's infused with a lot of different meanings and maybe some of them contradictory. But you know what I'm talking about, right? Like. Yeah. Is this really a unique country? Or, you know, if you look at the inputs, do the outputs match? Like, a country that had unprecedented immigration is filled with natural resources, had a large area for people to settle, was protected because of its fairly rugged borders with its two neighbors and its historic, you know, power compared to them. And then something like World War II happens where the economy of most of the rest of the industrialized world gets pretty much largely wiped out in for large swaths of areas. And the U.S. becomes a dominant cultural and political power. I think in a lot of ways, the story's sort of complicated. The U.S. actually became a dominant economic power more from like about 1850 to 1950 than from like 1950 to 2000. But it became this, you know, preeminent world power in that era, right? And it's like...
Right.
It all kind of moved together, although not, it's you know, there's a lot of complexities to how it really happened. But doesn't it really seem like the inputs match the outputs, that the U.S. had, you know, a lot of natural resources, a lot of industrious people moving to it, a lot of investment in it, you know, and it grew and it became a big power and a big economy. What's mysterious about that? You know, like. There's nothing exceptional about the country. It's just had a lot of good things going for it. The way China is seeing remarkable growth now. Isn't that just an input of their historic size and their resources?
It is. And I think, you know, we get minimal coverage of what's going on in China. and they're about to overtake us. You know, it's pretty imminent, I think, and I think people are going to be minds blown, so to speak, when they realize that.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of different factors going on with the size of the different economies, but you know, you got to look at it as A, they have been maximizing their growth for years, and B, I don't think that many people expected them to pass Japan. I think they may have passed Japan in terms of how big their economy is. I mean, that's incredible. That happened, I think, much faster than anyone expected. Now, Japan's economy had been relatively stagnant for a while China's economy grew in the 90s and zeros, and at some point they passed them, I think, and it happened really fast, you know what I mean? Like, it was sort of inevitable, but the speed at which they passed them overall, for overall economy size, was pretty quick, although, to be fair, the average purchase power parity for a Japanese person is a lot higher. The incomes are a lot higher per person there.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, comments like that, it's like, but what about the other things that we do here in this country? And, you know, do we recognize our faults as well? You know, not so much.
No, we don't. And why is that? Like, I mean, is that true about most countries? Like, probably. Like, most countries tend to be maybe less critical of themselves than they should be, right? But do we have an exceptional, like, the idea of exceptionalism, do we have an exceptional delusion about how special we are or something?
Absolutely, I think.
You know, there's countries that just think they're the most powerful country on their continent. And the way we think of Americans, most Americans, I don't know, I shouldn't say we, because I wouldn't include myself, like, to, well, I mean, you know, whatever. The point is, I wouldn't include myself in this triumphalist thinking, but many Americans are very triumphalist in their thinking. And who's the big power in Africa?
Egypt.
Well, yeah, in the northern part, definitely, but South Africa in the southern part, and then Nigeria in the west. But you know, those are the big anchor countries, right? Those are the big regional powers. Mm-hmm. The new founding father of one of South Africa dies, it's a pretty big story, right? So Nelson Mandela's death, that was and his funeral, there was a lot of coverage of that. And in a strange turn of events, there was like a fake sign language signer next to the dignitaries. The guy claimed he had a schizophrenic episode, but there's a lot of doubt, like, there's a lot of question about whether he was even trained. He just made meaningless gestures, the guy doing the supposed sign language. And, you know, I saw an article, I think it may have been Gary Young in The Guardian, but somebody wrote something about, like, this article about how, you know, don't you think, and I'm paraphrasing it here, but don't you think that sign language there is to make people who can hear feel better about themselves, about the society they have, than really, like, making it possible for people that are deaf to know what's going on? Because, like, they have closed captioning in a lot of these things, which deaf people are probably used to using, and the sign language, like, again, this guy wasn't even doing actual signing. I mean, you know, that just shows how, like, it's the definition of a hollow gesture when you do it like that. Like, you're kind of treading a line anyway when you do that, because it's like you're having someone up there, do you know what I mean, who I guess you're trusting to do, you know, the signing, which applies to a relatively small percentage of the audience. And, like, I'm kind of, I don't want to say I'm against it. I'm just saying that it seems like kind of a feel-good measure when they do it there's other ways they can close caption in a signer and stuff. When you have one really prominently up there, it just kind of seems like it has a distracting effect on the presentation sometimes. Like, to the point where they seem like they're trying to make it a show. Like, that's part of the show.
Ah. I mean, usually they're right in front of the people that they're signing for because, you know, I mean, there's not going to be dead people all on the balcony or something, you know.
Well, that's exactly it. When they have them standing here, Mandela Funeral Interpreter. I mean, look at how close he is to Barack Obama, and he wasn't cleared. Like, I'm just saying, this is a silly thing. Like, it's almost like people are taking advantage. It's not being done right, obviously, when the president of the United States is standing next to a guy who, according to his own version of events, had a schizophrenic episode while the event went on, and he just made empty gestures because he was afraid of the demons he was singing or something. I'm not kidding.
No.
That's basically the story that was being thrown around about him. And there he is. Look how you can see in that picture. He was right next to the president of the United States, the president of South Africa.
It's an odd story. Don't you think?
He was just giving meaningless gestures the whole time. I mean, it's so empty. It's such. I just think it's such an insult to like people that would have, you know, been reading the signs. And again, like you said, like they might have an interpreter right near them, and they also might have closed captioning, and they might. They're just like I don't know, but it was a real mess.
And to be so close to the president, I mean, what's going on there?
He admitted he'd had a violent schizophrenic episode. Let's see. I'm gonna find it. Like, the Guardian reports, okay, the guy, Mandela Memorial Interpreter says he has schizophrenia. South African minister concedes mistake in hiring of Thamsanqua Gentij, who says he was hallucinating at service.
Maybe it's because it was on such a major occasion. I mean, do you look back at your performance and are you happy with it?
Absolutely, absolutely. What I've been doing, I think that I've been a champion of sign language. As I'm saying that, I've interpreted in many big events, not only the event that is in question now. If you remember, I've interpreted in Masisulu's funeral. If you remember, I've interpreted in many a brief conference, including the presidential conference, and then there was no one at all that said I've interpreted the role.
There's an article in the paper suggesting that, in fact, you have an illness, suggesting, in fact, that you did have a problem. You're quoted as saying that in fact, you were sick.
You know, in terms of talking my medical... My medical status, I won't feel comfortable to talk about it on the media.
You want to get high?
This guy, I mean, who knows? But this guy, like, you know, I mean, he sounds like he's full of shit, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So somehow he was up there gesturing. I can show you some video of the, I just look up Obama's speech at Mandela, you know, whatever, memorial. And here, let's see now. You know, okay, so he comes up and here's this part of his speech. We can play the speech just so you can watch the guy.
Inside the largest stadium in Africa, President Obama will now remember Nelson Mandela.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Are we going to be united or are we going to be divided?
Oh, that's pretty good.
My candidacy is all about big change in Sacramento.
To address myself and the Mandela family, to President Zuma and members of the government, to heads of states and government, past and present, distinguished guests.
You said that, I want to give them a treat.
It is a singular honor to be with you today, to celebrate a life like no other. To the people of South Africa, people of every race and every walk of life, the world thanks you for sharing Nelson Mandela with us. His struggle was your struggle. His triumph was your triumph. Your dignity and your hope found expression in his life, and your freedom, your democracy, is his cherished legacy.
Big week.
It is hard to eulogize any man, to capture in words not just the facts and the dates that make a life, but the essential truth of a person. Their private joys and sorrows, the quiet moments and unique qualities that illuminate someone's soul. How much harder to do so for a giant of history who moved a nation toward justice and in the process moved billions around the world. Born during World War I, far from the corridors of power,
so, you know, that angle, you see NBC News wasn't even including him in the frame, even though he was only feet away.
Yeah.
Generally, you know, so I mean, how much is that, was that even going to be picked up by, picked up on, you know, but anyway, okay, so now here's this segment, from Jimmy Kimmel, where they have someone interpreting, was being said by the speech maker, but what was actually being signed by the guy. So here we go.
It's over and over here. Okay. That's it. That's him. And you see, he looks like a backup dancer for a singer we cannot see or hear. Almost immediately, viewers who actually do know sign language started calling him out online. And then video popped up today of the guy interpreting or doing whatever it was he was doing at other events, too. So he has done this before. And I would love to know what this guy's story is. I mean, was this a prank? Is he a scam artist? Is he just very, very bad at his job? So we brought in a real sign language interpreter. Justin, where's Justin? Justin, come on in here. This is Justin. Hi, Justin.
For me?
How long have you been, a sign language interpreter?
About 5 years professionally.
5 years. And you've done this for us at some of our concerts outside.
Yeah, Hanson right here. I did it for Hanson.
Oh, yeah. Does Hanson have an inordinate number of hearing impaired fans?
Just one.
Yeah.
Just one. Oh. And is that a compliment for a band?
Yes, actually, it is.
No, it is not. all right, so let's watch this guy and tell us what he seems to be signing, if anything at all, okay?
Sure.
All right, I'll be quiet. You roll it.
On behalf of the family, I would like to thank all the...
I support... Basic salutations here. Salutations. Inside, joining in this week's cigarette. Inside, to prove and on, to support. I would please to say from me to you.
It's a joke.
Talking to you so far.
Is he even attempting to make sense?
It's complete gibberish.
Okay, all right. Well, we have one more.
Hello, welcome so far.
Michelle Obama.
Cigarette join. Bringing in different to you. A circle. And I would like to pray this offering. Basically, this is fun. All of these balls to prove this is good. I'm sorry.
Well, to get the idea about the quality of wow. signing that was being done.
That's crazy.
It wasn't like he was making a few mistakes.
He was signing, but
wrong.
He was like gibberish.
Well, it was complete gibberish, and that guy was probably just looking for like the closest thing that a sign person would think that they meant by that, you know, and trying to make some sense out of it. Like unreadable handwriting where you bring in a handwriting expert or something like that. Yeah. Because the guy doesn't really appear to know it, if any, you know, actual, you know, aptitude.
You don't think he does, but he was having a psychotic episode?
I don't believe that story, but I actually have no idea what actually happened. But it's obviously kind of a crazy, you know, farce. But, you know, not to forget a little bit about Nelson Mandela himself. Like, actually, you know, I mean, obviously he was a major figure of the 20th and into the 21st century, but and helped, you know, lead the struggle for equality of, you know, African, I mean, black Africans, because there were, you know, there were white African and British that had ruled the place, right? And he helped break down apartheid. So that was a, you know, major accomplishment. Now, in 2003, he was still more active. He was, you know, he died, he was in his 90s. So, you know, here and more in his sprightly, you know, 80s, here he's going around the world and talking about the invasion of Iraq and what George W. Bush was about to do, and obviously, I think you can guess, he didn't like it.
Both Bush as well as Tony Blair are undermining an idea which was sponsored by their predecessors. They do not care. Is it because the Secretary General of the United Nations is now a black man? They never did that when secretary generals were white. What is the lesson of them acting outside the United Nations? Are they saying any country which believes that they will not be able to get the support of the countries which have had to are entitled to go outside the United Nations and to ignore it? Or are they saying, we, the United Nations, are the only superpower in the world now. We can act as we like. Are they saying this is a lesson that we should follow? Or are they saying we are special? What we do should not be done by anybody. And if there is a country that has committed unspeakable atrocities in the world, it is the United States of America. They don't care. They don't care for human beings. 57 years ago, when Japan was retreating on all fronts, they decided to drop the atom bomb in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Killed a lot of innocent people who are still suffering from the effects of those bombs. Those bombs were not aimed against the Japanese. They were aimed against the Soviet Union to say, look, this is the power that we have. If you dare oppose what we do, this is what is going to happen to you. Because they are so arrogant, they decided to kill innocent people in Japan who are still suffering from that. Who are they now to pretend that they are the policemen of the world? What I am condemning, what I'm condemning is that one power with a president who has no foresight, who cannot think properly, is now wanting to plunge the world into a Holocaust. And I'm happy that the people of the world, especially those of the United States of America, are standing up and opposing their
Even
own
president.
I hope that that opposition will one day make him understand that he has made the greatest mistake of his life in trying to bring about carnage and to police the world without any authority from the international body.
Yeah.
It is something we have to condemn without reservation.
Yes.
That's right. It's you know, sad that we lost him, but hopefully somebody else will carry his vision.
Yeah, yeah, he lived a long life, and he did spend many years in prison, but he gotten out and had a number of years out. He was the president of South Africa from around 94 to around 98, and then he'd had his his later years of being a renowned international celebrity and statesman. We're going to come right back after this quick break, and you're listening to the PacificPelican.us/64 podcast with me, Dan McKeown, and with my lovely co-host, Jessica. So thanks for joining us, Jessica.
Thanks for having me.
And today's day, December 18th, 2013. Tiesto has a new song. It's called Red Lights. You want to listen to that whole song, just check out the show notes. There'll be a link to it in Spotify, or just look it up to find it on iTunes or whatever. It's at iTunes probably also. And you can find the show notes for this show at PacificPelican.us/64. Look for podcast 119. And Jessica, the Red Lights song makes you think of something that you've seen people do around town in their cars lately?
Yeah, so lately what I've seen people do is they'll come to a stop at the red light, and then maybe 5-6 seconds later, they'll just jam right through it. Now, these are short intersections. They're not, crazy busy intersections. Sometimes, they'll see the green arrow turn signal, and, sometimes you'll see any green light and they just go. I've seen quite a few instances in the last couple of days, and I just find it hilarious and funny and odd because it's so blatant. I mean, they're clearly stopped, and then they kind of look around and they're like, but then it's not like they're speeding off afterwards, Then I see them a couple seconds later at the next stoplight. It's not like they're making a turn. It's not like, they're in a hurry or there's some kind of immediate thing they just need to go.
They're just scofflaws.
Yeah, so I think it must be like a game or something. It must be like, this new thing for teenagers. I can't tell who's in the car, so who knows. But that's kind of what I'm thinking it is. It's kind of like it's the new game. How many red lights can you just, come to a stop and then run through? And it seems kind of dangerous, too. I'm thinking it's got to be drunk people or kids. I don't know. What do you think?
Okay.
I think that it sounds crazy, but I have seen people do that before over the years, but I haven't seen any recent uptick in that activity. But then again, you drive to work every day. And, you know, so I'm not in the car as often as you are. So I take your word for it. It's kind of crazy, too, with the snow coming and everything. You know, people just more irrational behavior. There does seem to be a certain belief, if you go far out enough in the country in certain areas, that if you stop at a red light and there's no one at the intersection, it's okay to just proceed on through. And, like, growing up in an inner ring suburb of Chicago and you growing up in L.A., I don't think that's the way we really thought, because there can always be someone coming right down the road and they're always crowded in those places. But, you know, I mean, in some areas there's a different kind of sense. Like, you know, the other flip side of that is people don't always know what to do with double yellows, it seems like. So they slow down into them, sometimes stop at them, instead of just like double yellow. Blinking yellow means like double yellow.
I like double yellow.
Blinking.
What a joke!
You know how that is with the driving around here. There's a lot of blinking yellows late at night because the roads aren't that crowded.
And I kind of just think you were bad drivers. You know, like, there's clearly a sign that says incoming traffic does not stop. And yet...
Oh, at the malls, they do that all the time. That's the worst. The
person will stop and, you know... Mm. Then the other
people... We just saw someone do that at the mall in North Austin.
They're like, well,
yeah.
You're obviously an idiot and you're thinking that you're stopped. And I'm just going to go. And so then, you know, the person who's at the stop sign starts to go. And then the incoming traffic person realizes, oh, I can go. And then it's a near miss or people are honking or, oh, it's
like an animal.
Yeah, it's just, it's crazy. You know, like, I think people should be tested like every 5 years or something. Like, get people off the road, especially.
Well, they do
people.
Test people pretty. They test people a good deal, but sometimes it's easy to pass. I know what you mean. It's inexplicable some people still have licenses. Some states have a lot of testing and some don't. You know, and I'm not sure with us being in our 30s, like we get tested every like 4 years in Ohio or something like that. It's not that frequent. But I think if you're maybe in your 70s or 80s, it might be a little more frequent. I'm not really sure. It varies by state, is what it comes down to.
Driving tests?
Yeah, like the intensity and frequency of driving tests. Like some states test people more rigorously as they age because it is a bigger danger. And some have, you know, there's different policies in every state because they all issue their own driver's license.
Wait, but have you taken a driving test? Not a written test.
Oh, an in-car test.
Yes.
No, not since I moved to Ohio.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay. Oh,
I mean,
okay.
Anybody can study the booklet and
well,
and pass
there's
it.
A vision test, too, though, and it seems like, because it seems like some of the older people driving can't really see the road well, right? And it's like, you would think that they could do a vision test that would be able to test road conditions, but I guess there's no test like a real-world, test.
Yeah, I think they just... They're just like, I'm old, I'm just gonna drive, and people will get out of my way. And that's how accidents happen.
Pretty soon we're just all gonna be in FEMA camps.
Pretty soon.
Excuse me. Well, there's a handful more stories that we're going to go through pretty quickly. Okay, Jessica, you ready to give me your quick take on a handful of stories?
Sure.
American Heart Association's cholesterol, quote, risk calculator, unquote, is a scam to get people on statin drugs because it overestimates risk by 75 to 150%. Did you hear about that? American Heart Association had this, like, quote-unquote risk calculator that they released, and it turns out basically its answer to everyone is to get on statin drugs, more or less.
That's horrible.
It's just like, you know, it's sort of funny, right? It's convenient that their pharmaceutical partners would benefit from such a mistake, that the mistake went that direction. And they already seem to have everyone over like 50 on like cholesterol or statin drugs or whatever.
It's pretty bad. It's not surprising, though, I guess. Don't they, like, endorse, like, food or something? And, like, I'm sure they make buckets of money.
There's a lot of advertising in that game, in the in the pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, they have this like heart check food certification program.
Gotta watch out for that stuff.
You know, I'm sure companies pay lots of money, and who even knows if it's valid now, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know how credible they are on different stuff, but there's this article in the New York Times, you can find the show notes, that talks about how some researchers at Harvard Medical School, I think, were like uncovered how wrong this like calculator was what they released. Have you heard about the right wing reaction to Pope Francis, the pronouncements he's made about market fundamentalism, more or less the idea, like he's talked about how the absolute rule of markets and or whatever, however he phrased it, is you know, deleterious to society, and that, you know, society should be, you know, more equitable, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, there's been this real like reaction from the right wing from stuff that actually sounds very logical to me.
No, I haven't. I mean, I can imagine just from what you've said, he's a pretty radical guy, but you know, I think I'm liking him more and more.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of, I think it's very possible that a lot of Christians around the world are in favor of the things he's saying about the economy, but there's this connection. Like, okay, so, you know, there's this article in theweek.com that talks about how Americans tend to be the ones that associate big business and markets and, you know, money with religiousness. That, like, you know, a lot of countries around the world see religion as one of the institutions that's there to help the poor or whatever. But, you know, in America, there's the prosperity gospel, there's all the hustler preachers, there's all that, you know, just all that, you know,
bullshit
out there that kind of maybe contaminates the message.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, media figures have said, so that moron Sean Hannity, this is him talking about this shit.
Marxists in my life are good people, so I don't feel offended. He literally went after, quote, trickle down, which is a term that our friend over there on the left used. I was surprised he responded, but I, as a Catholic, agree with Rush that the Pope sounds like he is against capitalism.
Yeah.
Because no, it is not true.
Helping the poor and
no, because he's attacking capitalism. He said unfettered capitalism is a new tyranny. Attack trickle down using.
I think yes. What he's looking at are the unintended consequences of capitalism, and the Pope is completely consistent with the doctrine, the moral and social teaching of the Catholic Church when he's advocating for, you know, and generosity, when he's advocating for selflessness and attacking a capital philosophy
market,
of there's
free market capitalism does help the poor.
Oh, I agree.
When you lower
completely.
Taxes, when you create competition in a marketplace,
yes.
That's what enables people to rise up. When you kill incentives,
no, it's not true.
Racism
yes.
Keeps a very powerful group of people at the top,
which is why the Pope doesn't like it.
And it broadens income inequality, which
right.
Is why he doesn't like Marxism. But free market capitalism
wrong.
Is vilified. That's the
he's
reason
not
why people can climb the ladder.
Free market capitalism is what America was.
Whatever, right? They're just yakking about all this, you know. But it really comes down to like how, you know, they're talking all this shit. They're claiming that they all of a sudden now they should be the ones to be spokespersons for Christianity or whatever.
Right.
Because what? Because the power of big business and market fundamentalism is being questioned, right? Which is the real guiding force for American conservatism.
I was gonna say, yeah, that's their religion.
That's the real power. There are plenty of very, very much religious believers in the U.S., you know, and many of them are supporters of the Republicans, although many are Democratic supporters, but The point is that they are a minority in the... They may be a majority in the Republican coalition, but they're a minority in terms of power. The real power that matters is the big business. So there's just another... I mean, that's really just another fault line. Because the Tea Party people are more kind of gun nuts than religious people, but they have that element too, right? And that goes back to the Republican Civil War we were talking about before.
Yeah.
It's the big business elements and so forth. I didn't get the volume sync right. I have to go back and hit the volume levels up a little. Other before that, we had a pretty smooth run going. In boycott, divestment, and sanctions news, maybe there should be a segment introduction sound for that. Quote, the American Studies Association announced Monday that its membership passed a resolution stipulating the organization endorses and will honor the call of Palestinian civil society for a boycott of Israeli academic institutions, unquote. So this is a group of professors, basically, American studies professors at universities in the U.S., saying that they're going to get involved in boycotting Israel because of the lack of opportunities afforded Palestinian academics and you know, the brutality of the occupation, things like that.
They really need more support, you know, if they're going to protest or stop working.
Yeah, have you heard about the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation working on biometric devices to measure, quote, student engagement, unquote?
Oh, no, it's horrible.
They're going to read information, electrical impulses, whatever, from students? The idea, it's phrased as giving feedback to the instructors and the lesson planners, but think about what it's really for. I mean, isn't this crazy? This is for controlling students and monitoring attentiveness and stuff. So it's a pretty crazy article in the Chicago Tribune from June 2012 about that. But I dug that up and I thought that sounded I don't know, that doesn't that sound pretty out there?
Outrageous, and I will repeal it.
Thanks for listening to our show. You can check the website out at PacificPelican.us/64 and then look for the post with the show notes for episode 119. And you can find Jessica's Twitter account at Jessica McKeown, all one word. And you can also find my Twitter account at Pacific Pelican, all one word. And if you want to check out my novel, you can find it on iBooks or on Amazon. So check out the website with the links to those different versions at djmcloud.com/book.